Welcome back, folks. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And I want to remind you on the way to this conversation that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org is MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. We are switching our attention to local news here at the moment with your help at 410-319-8888. You can also tweet us at Mark Steiner. You can send me emails to talk@steinershow.org. Log on to our Facebook pages, but 410-319-8888. Denzel Mitchell remains with us.
What's up?
Good to have you here. Educator, farmer, food justice advocate. Kalina Byrne joins us by phone. A media consultant, political strategist, and host here on WEA and often a guest here on the shows. Good to have you back with us, Kat.
Hey, Mark.
How are you?
I'm great.
Good. And Luke Broadwater is with us, who is reporter for the Baltimore Sun, who focuses on local and state politics. Luke, good to have you with us as
good
well.
Good morning.
And you all, again, 410-319-8888. Let me start with the one story here that last week while I was away dealing with family stuff. I was following, which is, and you wrote about, Luke, which was the firing of Glenn Keith Allen and the subsequent firing of Mr. Nielsen, who has for the last 9 years been the city solicitor. And I just, let me get your thoughts on this. I'll throw out something I said to Denzel, and let's stir the pot a little bit here. My first thought was, when I saw that, was I was a little taken aback. Now, I have no truck with neo-Nazis, no racists of any stripe. And would you do anything I can to politically, culturally, socially oppose what they do? And sometimes you have to confront them physically. That's happened to me in my past, and a little old now, but it might happen again. You never know. And the way this country's going, there could actually be warfare between that kind of stuff in America. All that's true. Let's hope not, but that could happen. But should a person be fired because of their political views? Should a person be fired because they're a racist working for the city government? I mean, is that grounds to fire somebody? I mean, they could fire. I was talking to like Mark Unruh this morning. I was, you know, the people who some of the people worked who have been part of anarchist organizations. Well, you're going to fire them because they were part of anarchist groups that had rebellions in the street. You're going to fire people because they were once a member of the Communist Party. I mean, should he have been fired? I think that's an honest question to ask. Stunned silence. Why is that?
Well, I think there's a line, right? I mean, I think that – so you see, for instance, with Trump supporters, there's a certain element of the Trump support that is white nationalists, right, that support Donald Trump.
Yeah, right.
So – and I think most people would think it's wrong to fire somebody simply for being a Trump supporter, right? But I don't think too many people have a problem with firing somebody who's a neo-Nazi.
I hate neo-Nazis, right? I mean, literally have in my youthful days fought them in the street, literal battles, when they attacked us. And so, but they are an anathema to everything I believe and stand for. And you know, they are racist and vile human beings. But should you be fired because that's who you are? Is that a grounds to fire somebody?
But you shouldn't be in a position of power. If you want to flip burgers as a neo-Nazi. If you want to cut grass, fine, do that. But if you are a racist, if and you are in a position of power, we're talking about a state's attorney, right? You're getting my tax dollars.
He's a lawyer working for the
state. Contracted lawyer,
right,
for the state. You're getting my tax dollars to make decisions that are going to affect people that look like me or set legal precedent. For people that look like me, your political views matter. Your political views are important. And so if you know, and he, you know, I read the article. He said, everybody said he's a great guy. He's wonderful. You know, there's tons of racists that are fantastic. Great people.
There are a lot of nice racists.
You know, there are a lot of nice racists.
A lot of nice anti-Semites. All kinds of haters. Can be nice people.
Yeah, you can be nice people. But, you know, then don't work. You can't work in a position. You can't work in a position of power. I mean, you're educating people.
What does power mean, though? I mean, Kat, you can jump in and tell me. Because, I mean, we're not talking about somebody who makes policy. He negotiates.
Right.
He argues contracts and law for the city on different issues they assign to him. He's not a political power broker.
Right. But what I think is the issue, especially as we are still reeling from this DOJ report, is the idea that our city, which we know to still be one of the most segregated cities in the country, is he arguing for what, which Baltimore? You know, we always talk about the two Baltimores and the teardrops and things that happen inside of the L shape. Is he lobbying for them, or is he lobbying for all of Baltimore? And I think that juxtaposition between how our city is racially divided and still where we are, and what his political views are, even though he's not a policymaker, I think it really was just a PR thing because of all of the racism that's coming to light as we still heal from last year and are now we're doing the work of healing from this DOJ report. I think that it was really more so just those two things in juxtaposition and just a PR move. I think it's even worse that Mr. Nielsen was fired as well. That feels much different considering he's been the city solicitor for 9 years.
Solicitor and also has done both mayor's biddings wherever they wanted them to do. He voted their way all the time. But there really is an issue here. Because, I mean, I think that when you say who's working in the people's interest, I mean, you could argue that nobody in city government and city council working in the people's interest if you think that building Port Covington is against the people's interest. If that, in fact, is your position, then there are a lot of people who fit that description. Mm-hmm. I mean,
well, and I think that the point you raised earlier was very cognizant in George Nielsen's mind when he and Alan met to discuss his termination, because I think he knew there may be a legal issue, and you can probably open up the city to a lawsuit if you fire somebody solely for their political views, which was the reason that Alan was fired.
Certainly wasn't for his work.
Right. So it wasn't that he had been performing poorly doing his legal work. It was solely for his political views. According to George, knew that this was such an embarrassment to the city that he volunteered, I agree to whatever you want to do to terminate me. I'll sign off on it. Because he had been basically closeted in this lifestyle for decades. Because he's a high-ranking attorney at DLA Piper, which is a big downtown law firm in Baltimore. He's working with Jews, with African Americans every day. Some of them are his bosses. Some of them are his friends. He's not marching around the office with swastikas on his arm. You know, so for this to come out, he knew was tremendously embarrassing for the city, for people who hired him, for himself, for his own family. So he volunteered to be fired. Then, obviously, only a day later, George Nielsen himself is fired against his will. He has to meet with the mayor.
She
won't meet with him.
Because he hired her? Because he hired him?
Right. Yeah, the stated reason was that the mayor's office just says he's no longer city solicitor. They don't say why he was fired.
Right.
But the reason that George was told in the meetings from my interview with him was it's over the hiring of Glenn Allen.
But is it because of a lack of due diligence? Because they didn't... Okay, so they didn't look...
Yeah, so you should have vetted this guy. You should have known that he had these views. If you had Googled him, you could find that he was somebody in the American Eagle Party, which is not as neo-Nazi as the National Alliance, but apparently is a far right-wing party as well.
Right.
And he's talking about being against vaccinations or something.
I'm open the phones here. But as someone, the reason I took such umbrage at this before we talked about this on the topic is that as someone who has been fired. I was fired from the city government in 1970. What year that was that? 71? In part because the FBI came to the Department of Recreation and Parks, where I was a street club worker, and said, you have a known communist working for you, and you have to fire him.
Mm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And they I mean, they spent years harassing me for our work in the movement, civil rights stuff and anti-war stuff we worked in, community organizing. And so I mean, so what's the difference? What is the difference between them trying to fire me because they didn't like what they thought my politics were and firing this guy because he's a racist? I mean, it doesn't sit. I mean, then that means they can go after anybody. They can go after somebody because they think that your politics are black nationalists. You don't like white people. So the Baltimore County government's going to fire you. I mean, we're, you know, that's the danger here, it seems to me.
But that's what happens, though. But, you know.
But you just let it happen? What do you mean it just happens? So, I mean, lynching.
But this is what happens. This isn't the first time. He's not the first person to be fired for their perception of their views. It just shows how far we haven't come. You said you got fired in 70-something. Here we are 40-something odd years later, and it's happened again. But like you said, and that was the operative word, what are his perceived political views? Because what I know about people in politics is their ideologies evolve with them over time. Maybe these were his views at one point in time. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're his views now. But I still ultimately, I think that the bigger issue is just that we've got to stop playing PR and start making some real substantive change in the city, not just in how we hire, who we elect, but the policy and things, because everything can't be fixed by a firing and a bringing in of someone new. And I think that we've done enough of that in the last year.
I hear that. Let me open this. Mm-hmm. Either one of you gentlemen want to jump in. I'm going to open the phones at 410-319-8888. Keisha, you're on the air. Line 3, welcome.
I just wanted to say that all of this seems to be some more wordplay for me, because if this was a member of the Black Panther Party, let's say, who was working in city government, city hall or whatever, he wouldn't even have gotten the job. It seems like only when it happens, when the shoe is on the other foot and it's flipped, that's when we're getting all of this attention. This happens to us every day because of our beliefs, what we stand for, what we were a part of, who we're related to. You know, it draws into our employment, you know, beliefs, and he's fired or whatever. Or all of them already knew about all of this stuff. These KKK members who had their seats on at night, during the daytime when they take them off and they go to their regular jobs, now it's all coming to light. None of this stuff is new, and it's just, when it comes to light, that's when people want to wash their hands, and they're like, oh, I wasn't a part of this. Oh, I didn't know. Oh, believe me, you knew. You knew, and you were a part of it, and it was hush-hush. That's why this country will never become anything, because we just, we were founded on lies and slavery and all of this negativity and the bloodshed and everything. So where did we go from here?
Okay.
I mean, and you and I talked briefly, before the hour, about your position on this, and I have to respectfully disagree, because racism in its vehemence and its effect on people's lives is very different than being a communist or being a cultural nationalist, and you're looking to change a system that is not working for everybody, right? But if you are neo-Nazi, or if you're racist, or you're a member of this, you know, extreme right-wing political party, your position is directly against my progress, you know, my community's progress, and in many cases, you know, my life. There are many other different political views, but very few of them have history of killing, maiming, supporting the death and destruction of other groups of people. And, you know, that's just not an argument that you can make about Nazism. So it's, you know, so you can't compare Apple, you know, you can't compare them equally.
There's kind of a conflict, I guess, between what you're saying, which is like a pure civil libertarian
right.
position, mm-hmm. and like a societal norm, what society wants, right? So like you look at the Civil Rights Act, there were hardcore Republicans back then who said, well, it's why should a business have to serve a black person, right? If that's mm-hmm. your business, it's freedom of association. You can serve who you want and mm-hmm. not. But more people, and that may be a principle, but more people said, well, I don't want to live in a society where you get to choose who to serve based on the color of their skin or their race. Mm-hmm. And so now you have this sort of tension again here where, yes, he has the right to his own views, but the mayor, the city solicitor, the vast majority of voters, I would assume, don't want a neo-Nazi working in city government. Mm-hmm. So
no, I understand that. I still maintain the position I hold on this. I think that
yeah,
I mean
that you shouldn't be fired
for your political view. I mean, look, we one of the most effective groups, we did a show about this a few weeks back with Carlos Muhammad, who's the minister at the temple here, NOI temple here. That back in the 90s, the city hired the Food of Islam Incorporated, which was their own offshoot security company. They mm-hmm. hired mainly but not exclusively people who are members of the NOI mm-hmm. and others to patrol the high-rises. And when they did, they were hugely effective in stopping violence and in helping people mediate their problems. And they were fired. Because they were a Nation of Islam, they were forced – Kirchhoff was forced to end their contract by the federal government and others with the pressure they had to end their contract. I'm saying so that to me,
but only to maintain the status quo, not because they're threatening.
No, because people saw the Nation of Islam as a threat to the order in America and a threat.
Exactly, we've already said that the order of America has to change. Like that's the. That's the issue here.
But I'm saying that to me, this is a slippery slope. Mm. That once you begin this, then anybody can be fired for whatever you want to fire them for.
Well, but like people get fired for whatever.
But it doesn't mean that we should allow it to happen.
It's true. Okay.
I think the point that I understand what you mean, Mark, but what that caller that we took was saying, and I know that you know, is that this happens in communities and the people of color all the time. For any number of different reasons. And so why should we make where we draw our line in the sand about something that's been going on for generations for this one white guy? Like, that's what the caller was saying. Like, we know it happens. It might not be right. We are at will state. But why is this guy going to be our line in the sand?
And on this show, it has been the first line. The first line they said on the show just a few months back, earlier in the year, was when housing workers were fired because they're standing up to the city government. Lucky and the rest who were let go because they stood up. City government, they were saying what was going on. They tried to make reports about the sexual abuse happening. They weren't listened to. They kept pushing and pushing. Mm-hmm. Their argument is that's why they were fired and let go from their jobs.
Right. And so, they were quickly rehired once the media reported the story. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Mm. So, I mean, so it's, yeah.
Right. Well, I will note in this instance, this case, that it was a at-will contract where either party right. could terminate for any reason. So it's a little bit different in that standpoint from a traditional city employee who, might have a better case to sue the government over. But
so let me get a thought in here, then we're going to switch gears. 410-319-8888. Tom, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Tom.
Several years ago, I read a book by Arthur Miller called The Crucible.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Based
on the Salem witch trials. And the reason he wrote the book is because Mr. Miller was persecuted for having communist associations in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. What's done is done with the firing of the city solicitor, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm concerned that some city council people and also delegates to the state from Baltimore City are talking about digging deeper to find out other people who may have associations that they feel are disagreeable. And this thing can get out of hand and turn into a witch hunt.
But so on the other hand, can you see where you could have a culture and you see this from time to time in like sheriff's departments and things, not necessarily here, but where you have sort of secret Klan groups that are meeting and they're saluting each other in private and stuff. And you have this insidious racist culture. And I think what the caller's referring to is there was, I think, a delegate quote in my story, Jill Carter, said, who else is working in city government that might be
right,
a closet?
Right, exactly. I saw that, right.
And the point is that most people don't want racists working in city government. They don't want people who may be coming up with policies or arguments or legal plans that run counter to the majority population. So,
and you know, I mean, and well, we've had this show on before about racists inside the police department. That I mean, so
right. That's a political view. You can't be a racist and you're serving an entire city. You're serving an entire community.
Police is a different issue.
Police is a different issue. Absolutely.
So let's go back to the phones here. 410-319-8888. Leroy, you're on the air. You've been waiting a long time. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I think one caller talked about things not changing. Well, it's not going to change if we can't get $15 an hour.
I hear you. Go ahead. I wasn't laughing at you. I'm laughing with you when you said that. Go ahead. Go ahead, man.
If people got mad, I think they should fire the whole city hall. I don't care if you voted for it. Send a message. Fire them all. And I think we get $15 an hour.
Well, you know, several of the councilpeople did kind of get fired in their last election. So, and I will note that six of the eight that voted against the $15 minimum wage are out of city government in December. And I do think that if this bill comes up again before this new council, it is a much, much better chance of passing.
So this it was kicked. So what happened with this? It was kicked back to committee, correct?
Right. So Mary Pat Clark, the bill's lead sponsor, was essentially one vote short of passing the bill. She had 7 of the 15
council
members.
And that vote was actually Carl Stokes decided not to
Carl
vote for
was,
it.
Yes. Carl was among
those.
It
was kind of shocking, but.
Yeah. Carl was among those. And Carl had an interesting logic when he explained his vote. He said, this will put us $4 or $5 ahead of the rest of the counties. And he thought that workers from Baltimore County who were maybe already a little richer, maybe a little better educated, presented a little better, would come in and take these $15 jobs from the city residents. So that's an interesting way to view things, Carl. But so that was the argument he made for his stance. So what Mary Pat Clark did was, seeing that the votes weren't there, she pulled it back into committee. They're going to try to get one council person to flip in the next couple of months. And if they can, then they'll bring it back. But if not, they'll reintroduce the bill with a new council, which, as I mentioned, has Chris Burnett, Shannon Sneed,
if they win their general
John
elections.
Bullock, et cetera. All these people coming on who are for it.
Right.
And so that it will have Ryan Dorsey will have a very, very good chance of passing at that time.
Kat, you want to jump in on this one?
I'm still kind of on the fence about this. I understand the logic behind why we're supposed to be for, but I also have listened to the critics and the people in the business community that don't want it. So I thought Carl's explanation, I didn't hear the part about Baltimore County. I did read somewhere where he was saying he would rather leave it in the hands of the new council and abstain himself because they're the ones who are going to have to deal with it and they're on their way out. And I kind of respected that because this is going to be his last legacy, I guess. That and going off on the people in CNN last year. So
yeah, I mean Jack Young obviously will have a big role in it because he's said he wants $11.50 or he wants the whole state to do it together. And if he so one way that if Jack Young did want to stop this, he could appoint to the head of that committee someone who's really opposed to it, and they could refuse to give it a vote. So that would be if you wanted to be Machiavellian about it, you could. Mm-hmm. You could do that, but it does seem that they will definitely have the votes, given that these elections are likely to go the way we think they will.
We're going to get a very short break. We're going to come right back and come to your calls at 410-319-8888. Keith, Rashad, the next two callers up, 410-319-8888. Stay with us. We'll continue this conversation, go back to what we talked about earlier, but look at the Marilyn Mosby case and whether or not it should be dropped. Stay with us. Back. We're here with Baltimore Sun's Luke Broadwater, Ken Lederberg, and Denzel Mitchell, and you at 410-319-8888. And as I promised, we're going to go right to the phones and get your thoughts and ideas and also talk a bit about Marilyn Mosby and this lawsuit and where that may be taking us and what the politics of that is. It's more than a lawsuit. It's a huge political question, I think. 410-319-8888. Keith, you're on the air. Welcome.
How you doing, Mr. Stein? I had like a two quick questions. First, about Mr. Nielsen, Maybe somebody can explain it to me. Doesn't he serve under the pleasure of the city mayor? Like, I mean, yeah. She can hire, fire anytime she wants.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I mean, because I mean, I just noticed that every time when the mayor was out of town or had something to do, Mr. Nielsen voted. Like a proxy in her place and everything like that. So
that's right.
I mean, maybe it was just time for a new administration, and maybe with this last little thing with the with Mr. Glenn Allen was the final straw. And my next question is anybody going to question Mr. Burnett, the new councilman coming in, with his close relationship working with the child organization? He told me that they are not known to blockbust. Any neighborhoods, but I'm just wanted to put that question to you. Has anybody heard
anything about organization? What organization?
CHAI, the Jewish Homeowners Association that buying a property in Baltimore. Yeah, he works for them. He said he's going to be a full time councilman now, but he works for them full time, and I just sort of learned it's like a conflict of interest. That's what I was thinking.
I'm not familiar with the issue either, but I'll be happy to look into it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and I don't know about them buying houses up in Baltimore either. I haven't heard that at all.
When I was a realtor, I had clients that we referred to them, as you do NACA and other places, for housing cost assistance and different programs like that for first-time home buyers, but I don't recall them purchasing property.
No, yeah, it's the Comprehensive Housing Assistance Incorporated. It's there to they are kind of a housing rights organization for the Jewish community, buy houses mostly within the Jewish community. So I don't know about
blockbusting.
Right. Not yeah. Blockbusting, but
yeah, but he's right that George Nielsen does serve at the pleasure of the mayor. Had been city solicitor for almost a decade, first under Sheila Dixon and then Stephanie Rawlings Blake, and had only ever voted a different way from the mayor once, and that was under Sheila Dixon, and she told him not to do that anymore, and he's never done it again since. So, wow. Yeah. So, you know, he had been sort of a supporter of the mayor's policies, sort of has to be. He's the city lawyer, and
right.
I think he was very surprised when I interviewed him about suddenly being let go over this.
I'm sure he was.
Was he really, Luke? Because I felt like his days were numbered ever since whoever ran the story about the text that he wrote to Sheila Dixon during the primary campaign.
Everybody knows that when Rawlings Blake first became mayor, that she had thought about replacing him and had considered somebody else, but it didn't really work out. And then she had some differences over the years. We know that they weren't very happy a long time ago when he said he would look into whether it was proper for her to vote on contracts with Johns Hopkins while her husband worked there. They didn't like his comments in the paper about that. So there were flare-ups over the years, and maybe, yeah, when he gave money to Sheila Dixon during the campaign, I bet the current mayor wasn't too happy about that. So in the source that I talked to in the mayor's administration say this was sort of the last straw for them. But he says in his conversations with the deputy chief of staff who actually relayed the firing that it was over Glenn Allen. So
we're going to go back to the phones here. Rashad and Keisha, hold on. We're going to come to your calls in a second. I just want to raise the issue of this, the lawsuit in Mosby saying they want it dropped. But let's talk a bit about what the lawsuit means, Luke, and then kind of get into what the politics of this is.
Sure. I mean, you know, these are these officers who were charged in the case of Freddie Gray's death believe they've been defamed. They believe that they have their names been dragged through the mud, that their reputations have been tarnished, and they blame Marilyn Mosby and the sheriff, Sam Cogan, the deputy sheriff, for that. Do they have a legal leg to stand on? I don't know. I mean, as the lawyers for the Attorney General's office say, these charges were upheld by probable cause at many steps along the way. Ultimately, they went all the way to the judge's verdict in the end. So, is that defamation? It remains to be seen. There was a famous case about 10 years ago where the Baltimore Police Department was sued by officers who said that they had been defamed in search warrants. And the police department had argued at the time that basically we can lie in search warrants, that it's not defamation. And the Court of Appeals said that, that was improper. You can't lie in search warrants. You have to tell the truth. And so there is a standard set by the Court of Appeals that your legal documents, even charging documents, have to be factual and have to be truthful.
But the politics of this, Catbird, it's a lawsuit, but it's also the politics of what's going on with these cases against the officers, and what could be also potential political fuel for this next election that she has to face.
I honestly feel like, you know, this is why we need tort reform. As we just said, probable cause was there. And I don't know, I've heard rumors that some of these attorneys for some of these officers are looking to run for elected office. I don't know how true that is. But I think this was poorly advised. And honestly, I just don't understand why they would do it. If you really care about the city and you care about the people that you serve, like you claim, despite how we might feel about you as a community, then you show that by going.
I'm sorry, we just lost that last word, Kat. What did you say?
I said go back to work. You got your back pay back. You didn't lose your job. This child's life can't come back to his family. It's a family in a city that's torn apart. Why are you now creating and adding to the trauma? That was my argument after the first two losses with the state attorney's office about dropping the rest of the charges if they weren't going to be able to try them correctly and get convictions. Then stop re-traumatizing an already overly traumatized community. I just feel like it's selfish, and asking the taxpayers to pay more money to them is not something that we owe them.
And I think there's also a political line being drawn here between some of the organized sections of the police force, the FOP, politically, and state attorney and politics in Baltimore. Even though most of them don't live in Baltimore, there's a real line here, and you're also seeing people line themselves up to run. I think who's been on the show before, Warren Brown, clearly I think is maybe lining himself up to run against Marilyn Mosby.
Luke Smiles.
Huh?
I said Luke Smiles.
So, I mean, I think there's a lot here beyond just this case.
There's several people that have been talked about as potentially running, and I would not be surprised to see Marilyn Mosby with three or four challengers.
Yeah.
Any thoughts before we open the phones here?
I mean, my only thought is how do these officers? I see this as a retaliation and distraction and deflection from justice for poor working class and oppressed communities in this city. When it was Marilyn Mosby's job as state's attorney to try to seek justice. Now, you know, that wasn't achieved, but you can't then. It's very problematic for you to flip and essentially attack the person who's working in the same city and under the same government as you, who's trying to seek justice and create some equality in the city.
Let's open the phones. Your thoughts 410-319-8888. Rashad, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning, Rashad.
The Department of Justice investigation on the Baltimore City Police Department.
Hey, Rashad, could you turn your radio down so we could hear you better, please? Thank you. Thanks. We got you. Go ahead. Go ahead, Rashad.
That charged the police department in the city of Baltimore all those violations, and the people in the city hall, they are part of that. They are part of that. The whole state, the city of Baltimore, the officials, the police department, they are part of that conspiracy against the people in the city of Baltimore. They said nothing about that. So I'm asking you and the brother on there, can the citizens, all the citizens of Baltimore, so-called blacks, file charges against these institutions that continue to try to serve us instead of serving us? They just throw us under the bus. And that goes for Mayor Stephanie. She's a bad business person. She's not doing business for the so-called people in Baltimore City as a proper person. She's doing what the government tells her to do, and the Congress tells her to do. So I think that we should break away as a people from this situation and create our own government. We have to solve our own problems. We can do that under the Constitution.
Okay.
There's nothing stopping us from doing that.
Other than the question of the kind of unity, yeah, Denzel?
You don't want to fire him from his job, huh? Though, right, for his political views.
No, I do not. Right. No.
So I think in a much larger context, you know, when we're talking about American politics and what poor black and brown and oppressed people are experiencing in this country right now, I mean, that's a very, very astute position that, you know, essentially the police are not doing their job in serving and protecting all the community. You know, many of us feel threatened by the police and the state's attorneys throughout the country whose job it is to, you know, to seek justice for people who are victims of police violence and police brutality aren't able to do their jobs as well. And so there needs to be some actual reform.
You know where the reform happens, Denzel? When the people who call our station and talk about what the DOJ report revealed that voted strongly down the Democratic line take some ownership for the fact that they put these people in place to write and enforce these policies, and they've continued to do so, especially in Baltimore, since 1967. So, you know, when the DOJ report comes out and we talk about its impact on our community and the community is outraged, they either are not voting or they're voting for the Democrats that created and are enforcing and have been maintaining these policies. You talk to them about an outside candidate, a Green Party candidate, or a Republican, for God's sake. Oh, my goodness, now you're cursing at them. But the same people that they now want to be held accountable for what's happened in their community, they vote for time and time and time and time again. At some point, this is kind of like suicide. Nobody's doing it to you if you're complicit in having it done to yourself.
But, I mean, there's a history of politics that says that the majority of people vote in very moderate established ways. I mean, that's just the nature of mm-hmm. politics in America. It always has been, especially local mm-hmm. politics.
Right.
Well, that kind of power remains. I mean, there's very little upheaval that overturned. I mean, Mosby was an upheaval that overturned the established order at that moment. Mm-hmm. And some people argue it was just a different established order overturning another established order. But whatever your argument is, she overturned the established order. But that doesn't happen often. Mm-hmm. You saw it in the city council races. That's because some people resigned, but two councilpeople lost in those races.
Right.
Luke, right? I mean, so some of that does exist.
Even in that framework, you're still talking about a Democratic primary. I think Catalina's point is about looking towards the other party.
Right.
And that, for whatever reason, that has not really been an option in Baltimore for so long. And, you know, I don't know really how to change that.
We need open primaries. I mean, not allowing – there have been Democratic candidates that ran in primaries that I liked and I would have wanted to support, but I don't feel like I should have to change my
right.
political affiliation to do so.
Right, exactly.
But
disenfranchised as independent voters. I mean, I can't vote in the.
Well, I mean, you look what happened in California. The two leading candidates for the U.S. Senate in California are both Democrats
right.
who
mm-hmm.
ran an open primary.
Mm-hmm.
Kamala Harris and Sanchez
yeah.
running against each other.
That might be a way
to
fix it. Or I know in some countries they do a two vote where you vote for your favorite and second favorite.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
that allows third parties to flourish more because. People can see, oh, wow, there is a lot of people do like the Green Party
right.
or do mm-hmm. like the Libertarian or the Republican or whatever.
No, that if the governor agrees to come to our Annapolis summit again this year, if we have one in January, that I think that'd be an interesting question to ask the political leaders of the state. What about open primaries?
Mm-hmm.
And why not push an idea that nobody's talking about? Because, I mean, that is one way to expand democracy. It changes the nature of an open primary might have meant that you would have seen in the city right now, whether you like it or not, you would have seen a runoff between the woman who won the mayor race and Pugh and Dixon could have
mm-hmm. head to head
in November. You know, if there was an open primary, that could have been possible. I mean, and who knows? So anything could have been possible. So I think that those are the kind of things I think that are questions we should be asking.
Right. But I mean,
and I'm for open primaries, but I also just feel like, especially since the DOJ report and listening to Martin O'Malley the former governor and also former mayor, whose zero tolerance policies are very much tied to the things that came out in this report, you know, that when our callers call in and talk about what happened, what they read in that report, in 2010, who did you vote for? Because if you voted for him to make him governor, you voted for this to happen in your community. I just feel like we need to be equally yoked in understanding where the issues lie so that we can have open primaries, but if we're still going to elect blindly Democrats that disturb our communities, nothing will change.
And it always was a campaign issue. I remember that campaign against Ehrlich and Billy Murphy,
right,
and Dwight Pettit cut radio ads about zero tolerance, mm-hmm, and about mass arrests. So the O'Malley's opponents have tried to raise that every year. I remember even when he won in 99, the big debate was over zero tolerance. And so Catalina's right that people did vote for him and he ran on those issues.
So let's hear your thoughts. 410-319-8888. Go to Keisha and Robert. Get your calls right in a row. Keisha, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. So I have two things. First, I wanted to piggyback on this minimum wage thing.
Okay.
I just wanted to say that several years ago, we had this discussion about minimum wage being bumped up to $10 an hour. Well, it's 2017, it's still not at $10 an hour. It's at $8.75.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now we're talking about $15 an hour by 2020 or whenever it's supposed to be. By that time, the cost of living will have, you know, tripled.
Right.
So everybody will still be in the same basket. So that's my thought on this wordplay of how they talk about everything.
A very important point.
And the second thing is with this election, I'm just so discouraged with the whole thing because we knew that Bush stole the election, okay, years ago. He pretty much got on national television and said, yeah, I stole it, and what are you going to do about it? We still haven't even gotten past that. And then we had this Obama guy. I think that people, we just don't read. I think we just go with the fad. We go with whatever somebody says is good for us, and we listen to that instead of going in and reading and researching for ourselves to see who is good for us and who is not good for us. Mm-hmm. But the whole government stinks, if you ask me, from the president on down to the city council in Baltimore City. Everything stinks to me, everything. Because even with the election with Dixon against Pugh, Catherine Pugh, we had questions about, you know, her vote. And I worked with some of the, you know, on Elmont Street where, you know, we were calling people and everything. And those people did have to sign papers to say we were going to put them on a van and they had to go over to Westside Skill Center and put in a vote. No, she didn't say you have to vote for me, but it was very clear once you got into her headquarters that you couldn't talk
right
about any other candidate. Mm. So this whole thing stinks to me. It all stinks. And it's like we're running in circles talking about things and it's not changing. It's not going to change. We have to just really pretty much overthrow the government, it seems, to say. Otherwise, we're all screwed. We're all screwed. I don't care how much money you have or don't have. We're all screwed in the days to come.
Keisha, thanks for your thoughts. Appreciate the call. Let's get another call in here. We'll come back to our guests at 410-319-8888. They can comment. Robert, you're on the air.
Hello. Well, one thing that the previous speaker said, I have some sympathy with him, but that's further down the road. We probably are going to have to overthrow the government. But the thing is, the problem, I guess, is that in the interim, it's hard to get an oppositional political thing happening. Now, one lady says, well, you know, we keep voting for the Democrats, and why not the Republicans or the Greens? Well, as far as Republicans are concerned, they're just another corporate party anyway. So the Republicans give you zero tolerance in New York, and Democrats give you here in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
The difficulty is, how do you make an oppositional political presence? That is probably the thing that has not been figured out in the United States. And I'm not sure what the answer is to that. But if you're not talking about an alternative to the two corporate racist parties, Democrat and Republican, it is a trip between Tweedledee and Tweedledum. You can choose which is the lesser evil. And I won't say that's irrelevant. You know, I mean, sometimes the lesser evil makes a difference. But if you're talking about a solution, a fundamental transformation, then how do we get there?
Well, I think that Mark has done a great job of explaining that and having Joshua Harris, who's a Green Party candidate for mayor, on his show a lot as we go into the general. He was a Democrat who understood that because of a closed primary state, he might not have made it past April and switched parties. But ultimately, I wish everybody that wanted to take the energy to overthrow the government would just take the energy to vote differently, because that's how you make these things change. I don't want to have to sit down with certain people who are considered smart and write a new constitution and a new Bill of Rights and argue what's fair and equitable and to who, because let me tell you something, the LGBT community will still be left behind, the trans community will still be left behind. We have isms inside of our own communities of people of color that I don't trust all of us just to overthrow the government and write a new one that's better. But what we could do is free people, die for us to have the right, and it can be happening right now. Go work for a third-party candidate. Make a third party a viable option. Go vote for one and see what happens. It's better than not voting and then still being mad that the people that you voted for did or just sat out of the election are continuing to treat you like the gum on the bottom of their ship.
Luke, overthrow the government? I'm just messing.
Well, I mean, that was tried, and it resulted in 700,000 deaths. So, but yeah, I'm not for overthrowing the government. If that's what you
just
want,
just checking. Not for
overthrowing the government. But Catalina's right. There's ways to reform from within. There's ways to reform at the ballot box. You should vote for the candidates that represent what you want to see.
But I think without belittling what people have said, and that didn't make light of what the callers were saying, that I think that the sentiment of overthrowing the government is that things are not working for people. People are very frustrated that things are not working for them. Mm-hmm. And these policies have not changed the lives of hundreds of thousands of people in Baltimore who are living in dire poverty and some of the worst conditions in America. I mean, that's not...
It's not changing, and it's not changing if... I mean, I've voted for third party since I could vote. Nothing has changed. So, yeah. I mean, it takes more...
Did your third party candidate win?
No, of course not.
Okay, well, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Then they're not...
Right, I mean, but we're essentially looking at two sides of the same coin. So, you know, a handful of people in Baltimore City are organized to vote for a third-party candidate. You know, it doesn't change the political system in the city, and so we're still dealing with these same policies where, you know, they can waste more tax dollars for us to have a conversation about the state's attorney being sued for trying to seek justice for the loss of life of a Baltimore City resident.
Luke?
Yeah.
Didn't Mark say that you were a political strategist?
No, I didn't say he was a political
strategist. No, I'm not.
I never said that. I said that about you.
I'm not. You're a political strategist.
I said about you, Kat, not about him. No. I said he was a farmer.
Yeah.
A farmer. Okay. More sense. You can organize. Like, there's ways to get a third party candidate elected. The issue is that it's such a foreign concept that people won't even begin to think about how they.
Well, but you can't. I don't just put on the people. Sometimes you have to put it on the third parties themselves who do not know how to organize an election or a movement to make things happen. That's part of the problem. I mean, the Greens in the city have not really put out a major organizational effort. Have an impact, an effect on these elections, whether it's on city council or the mayor's race. We have them on the show. Before I had to leave, we had a Green City Council person on the show. We'll have Josh Resabella. We'll have him back on. But that's, I mean, it's, you know, their voices need to be heard, but they don't. They're not creating an effective political machine.
And free media is nice, but it's not how you win. Yeah. So, and I do think that Joshua Harris is working and going to do much better than Green candidates in the past, because I've seen him out and about. Passing out literature, talking to people.
He's in the barbershop.
He is working
his dog.
Hard, definitely.
Yeah.
But he faces some real structural challenges, which I was just talking about earlier, which is like, it's not 3-1 Democrats to Greens or 30-1. It's 300-1 Democrats to Greens. So that even if you convert a ton of people, it's still going to be very, very difficult.
Dixon voted for Joshua Harris, and all the people.
Yeah, but that's an if.
They could get a little bit easier.
Well, I mean, they've got to be able to organize people to do that effectively. people are just not going to jump up and do it.
Because you have to make that argument to a person who doesn't read, why should I vote for Joshua Harris? I don't know who Joshua Harris is, but I do know who Sheila Dixon is, so I'm going to vote for her. I mean, that, you know, that's the way American politics have, you know, have progressed. That's how we understand it.
You're making excuses for voters being lazy. I'm saying if you don't like the options,
I'm being a realist. I'm being.
I don't think it's necessarily.
You need them to come to you to organize if you know that you don't want more of the same.
But Catalina, most people are not like you, who live and breathe politics day in and day out of their lives, or cover it like Lou Broadwater covers it day in and day out. Most people don't do that. Most people watch the news, read the newspapers, and go about their daily lives trying to survive in America and trying to survive in Baltimore. They're not thinking about this night and day. I mean, it's and those who do think about it night and day, if they think that you should organize a third party, should be out organizing that third party in ways that make it a significant force in Baltimore. It takes organizational work. For people to come around, it takes real organizing. You can't just expect people to come around.
And the problem is, we were talking about, are real. So when people are saying they want to overthrow the government, what they're saying is society is not working.
Right.
So and it isn't working. We have fourth of the country or something. It's not working for a large swath of people. There's too much poverty, too much hopelessness, and we have producing schools that aren't teaching anybody anything, and it's I get why people are very frustrated, and so
this is
why everyone's talking about change on this show.
I mean, why so many people who have graduated high schools or go to college and they're all in remedial classes because we're doing them a disservice in our schools. I mean, there's lots of things to be angry about. So, but that has to be organized, and I don't see anybody really doing that hard work on the ground. I hear a lot of people talking. And he'll be doing a serious organizing on the ground. I mean, that's what makes change. This has been a great conversation, as always. You guys are great. So, Luke Broadwater, always good to have you in the studio.
Thanks for having me.
Reporter for the Baltimore Sun, who focuses on local and state politics. Catalina Byrd, media consultant, political strategist, talk show host, and more. Kat, always great to have you with us. Always.
Always a pleasure.
And Denzel Mitchell, educator, farmer, food justice advocate, and sometimes substitute host here on the Mark Steiner Show. Good to have you on the program again, Den. Thank you. Thank you all for calling in and writing. Sorry I didn't get to this last caller. I apologize to you, Bob, but the time just went right up against the clock. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our senior producer is Mark Unry. Our producer is Imani Spence. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our interns are Morgan Barber and Calvin Perry. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org. In the podcast of Mark Steiner Show, share it with your friends. Visit us on the web at steinershow.org or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.